Broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, this is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. Welcome back, everyone. Glad you could join us. Today, I'm kind of hoping that a fight's going to break out between the three of us. We're going to be covering some research on worship and maybe hopefully tapping into a little bit of the worship wars that we've heard about. Plus, I think our personalities are different enough. We should not be such an agreeable podcast. I don't think that's what we want to be known for. I think there needs to be a little tension, a few more hot takes. You okay with that?
Sure, we could get really innovative with worship.
I just thought, let's you know, get a little crazy. A question we are asked a lot is, have you done any research on worship, parentheses, in this really specific way, close parentheses, or about this very specific type of church? More often than not, our answer has actually been no. Sometimes the population is just too specific. Once I was actually asked if we'd done any specific research on churches in three particular counties in a state south of here. So I thought, no. Sometimes it's a question that would be interesting. It's not enough people would be interested in it. It's not that it's not important to someone. It's just probably wouldn't be important to very many more people than that. So if we don't have a full-blown research study out there, or what value can people get from research that comes from multiple studies, even if it's not on the very granular thing they're looking for?
It's always helpful to get multiple perspectives. And with any research topic, multiple perspectives are actually needed. And no one study is going to completely exhaust what needs to be known on that topic. And something like worship, where every congregation is involved in worship, it's something that has a lot of facets, and more research is needed on it.
Casey, church planters and church plant organizations are often wanting to know what's the latest in findings? What's the most effective in worship? What's happening out there? What did you find out when you were analyzing the data from our most recent church planting research project?
So we did a really large study of church plants. 843 church plants started since 2008 or later. I feel like it was interesting both in terms of just in terms of trying to describe that population, in terms of their worship habits, there's a who difference. 24% of church plants are multi-ethnic, meaning there isn't one ethnicity that's 80% or more of the congregants. More than 4 in 10 on average are completely unchurched or unchurched for many years. So, over 40% of people attending church plants are people who haven't been going to church prior to that experience.
Can you repeat that one? Because that was one when break that down for us a little bit on what you're saying there.
Yeah, so we've got so we're talking specifically about church plants started since 2008, and there's 18% of those people who are previously completely unchurched. They've never been to church before. Based on the estimates of the people responding.
And that's across all church plants?
Yes.
Those who are attending all church plants?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then an additional 24% who have been on church for many years, so maybe they were, that's, again, these are estimates, but, maybe they were going as children, and then they stopped going.
Okay.
And this is their first time back in several years. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so just, I think that's probably a different population in terms of who's showing up at these church plants than maybe what established churches are used to.
And that breaks a stereotype. I think a lot of people assume that when somebody starts a new church near them, that they're just borrowing church attendees from other churches. And sure, some of their attendees are people who've been attending church, but those are pretty high numbers for reaching people who've not attended church in a long time, or not believers, you know, never attended church. And, you know, that's why we exist as a church, is to reach those kind of people.
Mm-hmm. And so that's the who perspective on, you know, who's coming to these church plants. We also have a where perspective. Only 31% of these church plants say that a church building is their current primary facility. So, you know, roughly 3 out of 10 are meeting weekly, or, you know, or the primary place they're meeting for worship is a church building. For the rest of them, it's schools or retail or commercial spaces, homes, community halls, recreation centers, industrial warehouse spaces, on and on. You know, there are a lot of other locations that church plants meet at. So that's obviously different from established churches. We don't know. I don't think we know offhand the percentage for established churches, but I'd say it's fair to say that it's more than 3 out of 10. So
Scott, say a church planter is looking at that. What should they keep in mind when they're just looking at even the very practical things that they're seeing in that research? And if you, I'll do a plug for newchurches.com. You can see a lot of this data if you'll go register at newchurches.com, where we put a lot of our church planting data. But what should church planters, church planting organizations keep in mind as they're looking at these are using buildings, these are using schools? How is that helpful?
And there's kind of mixed signals in those facilities, because if somebody's in a church building from the very beginning, they're more likely to be helping with other church plants. And so they're, you know, just because they're financially in that position, they're able to invest in others faster and better. But at the same time, some of those in the facilities that Casey mentioned are actually more effective in terms of growing their attendance. And I don't think it's most of that is probably not because of the facility they're in itself. You know, let's all turn our sanctuary into a warehouse look and feel. But it's because they have that startup feel to them because they're in a warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're constantly trying to get beyond that point. They're working hard to reach people and to tell people about their faith and about you know, what this church is doing together. And we're willing to do that stuff together, even if it's in a warehouse. And
okay.
Yeah.
Casey, what else besides the where, the who and the where?
So I think the big one that probably people think about a lot is how, you know, so how are they worshiping? What's their worship style? You know, if I walk into a church plant, what might I see there? And, you know, particularly, you know, that might be different from if I walk into a typical established church. So, I mean, one of the things that stood out for me was when we're looking at the worship style, so 34% contemporary, 18% blended, 11% seeker. But as you go down, I mean, 7% postmodern immersion, 5% urban contemporary. The first time you see traditional on there is at 4%. So about 1 in 25 church plants are going to, you know, that's their worship style, is kind of that traditional. You know, another 1 in 50 said liturgical, so that's probably in that same space, but something that's really, you know, that's obviously different from established churches in terms of the numbers there. So that stood out to me. And then in terms of some of the communal aspects of it, 69% having refreshments served at a typical weekly worship gathering, 19% participants share a meal. So it wouldn't be, if you just walk into a random church plant, it's more likely than not that they're not going to have, you know, sharing a meal, but it's not unlikely either. You know, they got about a 1 in 5 shot that if you walk into, you know, a church plant, they're going to do lunch afterwards or whatever, you know, so that type of, different community, I think.
Like, you know. Did you just guarantee people they were getting a lunch if they went to a church plant? I mean, I'm just checking.
If they go to 5, it's more likely than not that.
Okay.
They do.
Yeah. All right. As we looked at some of our other projects where we've touched on research, one of the things I came up with was that it's worth taking a good look at quality research on worship, because it can be eye-opening and calming at the same time. Eye-opening because it helps us see beyond our own blind spots. We can see, you know, oh, look, whether it's church plants or other established churches, you know, what's happening, what are they doing that's different? But calming, because I think more often than not, good research pulls the curtain back on some of the claims out there that you have to change this aspect of what your church is doing to have any kind of success. You know, one kind of question you want to ask when people are making unsubstantiated claims, or, you know, what are they trying to sell you? You know, is it really happening in all over the country, all over the world, like they may be saying? And research typically flattens that out a bit. In our transformational church study that we did several years ago that had a huge impact on how we at Lifeway Research think about churches that are seeing transformation, life change, we saw that there were factors other than just the what they're doing or how they're doing it, and a little bit more nuanced and characteristics in general. What were some of your takeaways from that project?
Each of the questions we asked related to worship on the Transformational Church Assessment measured how the church is doing worship, but not in a method standpoint. And so the questions were practical. So they're things that a worship team could sit down and discuss and say, how could we do this better? But at the same time, you know, they weren't do it this way, not that way type of methods. And so, you know, one example would be, is there a sense of expectation of what's going to occur in the worship service with among the congregation? And so a worship team can sit down and say, you know, we're not, our scores are pretty low here. There's not a sense of expectation. What can we do to create that, but still within, you know, the way our church functions and within the way we think about worship? And so they can still be true to who they are and still show improvement in that area. One of the big takeaways from that transformational church research was not just that ability to measure how you're doing on worship, but the fact that that actually matters. Mm-hmm. So your church's scores on those handful of worship questions actually predict whether your church is growing.
Hey, that was a piece of data I was going to share.
So it's good stuff. It we all ought stuff. To be sharing.
Yeah, I know, but
because
you know.
We often hear that worship attendance isn't related to anything. It's not related to discipleship growth. It's not related to other things. But the health of the church, it's a key part. We exist to glorify God. And so if we're doing worship well as a church, more people will begin to attend worship, and we'll be reaching, we'll see more new commitments.
Models, I'm assuming those are statistical models as I look at these notes, said that 5 of the 7 elements are statistically significant in predicting attendance growth over 1 year. Worship is the most important element for long-term attendance growth. The model that includes churches' mean responses to the worship assessment questions accounts for 33% of the 5-year growth of that church. The look on your face says that's not familiar at all to you. So if we keep this in the podcast, we'll include some notes on that. If not, we'll just chop it all out. But what
that's probably true by itself. I was looking at the whole model.
Okay.
With a couple other items thrown in there with worship, we actually can describe 57% of the change in the worship over 5 years.
And I was reading from some notes that somebody else wrote. So let's talk about models and statistics when we're analyzing. What does a model tell us?
Well, Casey can probably describe through regression analysis what we're talking about when we talk about a model.
I don't know that we really want to tackle regression analysis unless he can do it simply.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Oh, this is getting good.
Okay, so 2 minutes of stat nerding out at the most. So I would say a good talk on models probably starts with the sentence, all models are wrong, but some are useful. So, you know, what we're doing in each of these is we're saying, let's try to predict something, you know, we'll call it a response variable. Okay, we're trying to predict some outcome. As a result, you know, using several other variables to explain it, so several other factors that help explain what's going on in that outcome. And so that's what you're looking at there is saying, let's explain that outcome of, what was it, 5-year growth in attendance,
mm-hmm.
you know, using all these other variables that might help explain that. So we know that there are, in that model, it's not accounting for everything that might help explain that because there are probably, you know, infinitely many things that are that in each individual specific situation that are impacting, well, how did their 5-year, you know, growth number look?
Okay. I'm going to dial you back just a little bit because yep. Casey used to teach AP statistics to high schoolers.
That's true.
And so let's pull it back to say, I won't make you explain regression analysis to an 8-year-old, but how about to an 8th grader?
Okay.
And so maybe even when we think about models, is it – am I making a good connection here? When I had jaw surgery, which is kind of a fun thing to bring up, the surgeon actually, they made a cast or a mold of my jaw. And he and the co-surgeon practiced on the model before the surgery a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was not my jaw. But because of how much was happening, I'm really kind of glad they practiced. So is... we've never discussed this as a connection, but am I even remotely making that?
No, yeah, I mean...
So is that what you do when you're modeling? You're saying...
Right. We know this isn't the real situation. We know that worship attendance isn't a function of these 6 things. We know it's a function of lots and lots of things. But these 6 things are pretty good at predicting what's happening here. So let's talk about it like those are the 6 things, you know. And we can even talk about how good a model it is, you know. How much of the variability is that explaining? So there's that piece of it, you know, because if the jaw looked nothing like your jaw, then it's not a very good model, and then practicing on it isn't going to really help that much.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it looked exactly like my jaw, but it wasn't my jaw. So now they're totally confused.
Yeah.
No. But I also think this goes back to when people are making we're not trying to say that when someone is saying, hey, this had an impact on our worship service, what I think research helps us remember is there are a lot of things going on in a worship service. So you may learn something from someone or you may pick up an idea, but that's never 100% of what's happening. Now, are we trying – I'll let either one of you have this since I'm going to throw it out there. We're talking about worship, worshiping God, you know – are we trying to statistically manipulate God or statistically predict what God's going to do in worship by even dabbling in this? Is this the Ouija board of research here? What are we doing?
We're using statistics. That's pretty different than a Ouija board.
I cannot wait to tweet that out with a link to a podcast.
Because... statistics depend on how orderly God has made the world. And so because we can find patterns. Now, there's some places where it's completely noise. It's completely chaos. But throughout creation, we continue to find patterns. We continue to find order. And we know from Scripture that especially in worship, God loves order. And so what we're saying is not that we can predict that more people will come to your worship services if. We can say that it's more likely that they're going to come if. And so, you know, the handful of questions we ask on the Transformational Church Survey are helpful in that direction. They predict that. They say that it's more likely. It doesn't guarantee it, though. You can be the off chance where it doesn't happen. You could be the off chance where you don't grow as much. Because there are a lot of other factors that the model can't account for. But the fact that it's accounting for a little more than half of what's going on with the change in worship attendance, that's describing a lot of what's happening.
And I think that we even see that from a – so on the opposite end from saying like this is scripturally unsound, I think you actually see – that is something scripturally affirmed, that there are certain conditionals, you know, that people who are following through, you know, there are places where God's saying, you know, act on these principles and, you know, for the most part, good things are going to happen, you know. So I think that us being able to...
That's very Proverbs.
Yes.
Of it.
Yeah, definitely. That's where I was going, you know, like the idea that, yeah, raise a child up in the way they should go. You know, I don't think we're saying that that's a one-to-one... like, oh, that child didn't grow up that way, so that means that, you know, this parent did a terrible job or, you know, things like that. But I think that that's you could model that. You know, you could say, yeah, if this parent is doing these things, you know, and raising their children in these ways that God's sort of said that, you know, that's you're going to expect, you know, that's a reasonable expectation that they're more likely to have better things, you know.
So if I can't sit still and worship, my wife can blame my parents. Is that what you're saying?
Scott, he just threw you a softball where you could plug the book that you worked on. Are you comfortable doing that on parenting? Yeah. We'll put a link to that. Okay. So there's some fun research way in the back on that. One thing that came to mind, but I'm having trouble coming up with a good, I'll count on you guys to give me a biblical illustration for the other side. But in motivation, like either our motivation in doing research, if it's or in someone's motivation in using statistics, if you're trying to build the Tower of Babel and it's control and your own, you know, it's about your platform or your objectives that are taking God off the throne, which you cannot do. I just want to make sure I'm not saying, but in your mind, if you think you're doing that, then it's not going to turn out well for you. But I couldn't off the top of my head come up with a really good biblical
I feel like maybe the other side of it might be sort of all the planting metaphors, right? That we're saying, hey, you're taking steps there. You know, a farmer is, you know,
okay,
putting stuff in the ground and watering, you know, like, but basically God's going to be the one that makes it grow. You know,
yep.
Like we can't, we're mm-hmm. not going to try to seize credit for that, you know.
Right. But you got to cast the seed,
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there's some, all right.
I don't know.
We should maybe work those out ahead of time, but we survived it. Okay. Another thing that I was looking back over some of that, that I think is helpful, the difference among transformational churches, 75% agree that they see evidence of God changing lives as a result of worship services. I think another lesson in how to read research is what does that tell you? You know, one, you find out what do people in your church say about that? Is that happening? And are people telling the stories? People could be experiencing life change and experiencing that God is changing their lives, but are the stories being told, and are the stories being told to the congregation? I think there's a level of transparency that has to happen there. But that also, working that word model back in, totally unexpected here, but that in some ways is modeling, hey, this is how someone is learning, this is how someone's growing, and that can be really encouraging, you know, to someone. So it could be an issue of maybe there's things in worship that are not happening, but maybe there's things that are not being communicated. Probably something we should have done at the very beginning is talk about what we mean when we're saying worship in this study and the importance of knowing kind of how words are defined in a project when you're researching it. Let me find my notes real quick because I touched on that. But Scott, since I can't find my notes, I'm going to make you ad lib. Talk a little bit about our use of the term worship in that project.
I don't recall how we used it.
So
I'm assuming we did not define it.
Actually, that is really good because one of the things that we encourage churches when they – I need you to laugh louder. And we may have to change this to a video podcast because I just need you to see Scott shaking his head in dismay at some of the ways.
And you doing the backstrokes.
Me doing the backstrokes.
Those are two
reasons. Because what we did in the project is we encouraged churches. We knew that worship, using that phrase, churches were at least within that congregation using it in a similar way. And as churches continue to use that resource, we encourage them, this is how you use it and some of the other terms. But it's important that you look at when you're looking at a study to find out, did it get defined? If it didn't get defined or if it was left up on how the survey participants took it, one of the things that we found is that as churches have gone through this, some of the feedback we've gotten is and this is kind of the most common way I think about it, it's the phrase worship, the entire corporate worship gathering, singing, preaching, offering, announcements, you know, that worship event. Other people are really quick to point in that they want that to include private personal worship. Now, our questions in the Transformational Church Project do not necessarily touch on that as closely, so that's a little complicated, but we touch on that in some other projects. Others, it's more just about a lifestyle, a posture towards God. And I know among Foursquare in the Pacific Northwest, for them, when they were giving me some feedback, they said it was specifically when singing is happening. So during the corporate worship event. So that's just a lesson that when you're studying research, especially in this, understand how they were using the terms. And even if they didn't use them in the exact same way you did, that helps you in interpreting what you're learning. Scott, you found some stuff from some other sources. Tell us about that.
Each perspective is a little different, and this perspective comes from the Faith Communities Today study that's done every 5 years. And kind of as the name implies, these faith communities is a pretty broad sampling of churches and even other faiths included. And a couple of the things that are helpful in that study is because it's been done three times, several of the questions, you can see a trend. And one of the trends that we see is that some of the turn toward more contemporary worship signaled by the use of electric guitars has actually leveled off.
Okay.
It's leveled off at about 35% of churches using them on a regular basis. But back in 2000, it was 24%. So we saw a big jump, and then it's pretty much leveled off since then. We see that fewer churches are being innovative or very innovative in their worship. That's dropped about 5% in the last 5 years. But what they do see, and they've seen in previous versions of this survey, is that a church that's more innovative in worship does see more attendance growth.
Oh.
So this is a very helpful study because of its breadth, but at the same time, there may be times where you say that's going to include some folks on that topic that I wouldn't want included in the view that I'm looking at on that topic. And so, again, I find it a very helpful study to turn to on a number of topics just because of its breadth and the fact that it's hit some things where we'd love to have a number on that. And they in fact, do.
Okay. That's good. Well, if you'll share that link with me, I'll make sure that is something folks can get into. I ran across a Pew Research article on some of their aggregated data on worship attendance, and I appreciated that they emphasized that the research reality that how often people say they usually attend services is not necessarily the same as how often they actually attend. Is that helpful to share, or is it undermining their research, or what are they doing there when they put that right? I mean, that's in paragraph number 3, or actually it's the last part of the second paragraph. I mean, they put that front and center.
Kind of depends on what they found. I think it's a question that a lot of people ask because for years, we're grateful to folks like Gallup that has continued to ask the same question year after year after year about, you know, how do you attend mm-hmm. church? And those are very helpful things, but the number always seems a little higher than we actually believe are in church on a given Sunday. And so, you know, findings where we can dig into how far off or for what reasons is it off is definitely helpful. So what did you find?
Oh, that's actually what I really focused on in that article. And so that was basically the emphasis of what it was, that diaries tracking attendance indicate they're attending less than if they're just answering a survey on it. So in a December 2016 issue of Christianity Today, there was a chart where explaining the reason people go church shopping. And I'm pretty sure this is another source from Pew. and it's Pew Research. So I want to share a few of these things, because one of the things that talked about the reasons people go church shopping, 49% moved, 18% disagreed with the pastor, 16% married or divorced, 12% dissatisfaction with church or its theology, 5% change in personal beliefs. So let's just focus on 18% disagreed with pastor, 12% dissatisfaction with church or theology, 5% change in personal beliefs. How is that helpful, and how can that potentially send leaders scrambling in how they process the research?
I mean, I guess, I mean, one of the ways it's helpful is just if you've got, you know, if I, for instance, I mean, it's going to depend on your context a little bit, but if you are on the receiving end of that, you know, if you're a pastor who's on the receiving end of that, you know, you can't make the assumption that, hey, the reason why they're leaving is because they have, you know, theological differences, or, you know, I mean, if the top one is just that they moved to a new area, then, you know, that tells you that it's not necessarily that they're coming with some sort of clash with a previous church. You know, it might just be that they have had a change in life situation.
Only 18% said they disagreed with the pastor, and so really all of the other responses had nothing to do with recent decisions in the church. And so a lot of times we think that we've got to be changing something in the church to keep people or possibly to attract people. And the latter may be true, but to keep people, that's not the case. Some of those preferences that we may hear complaints about from current attendees are not making the list of why they're going to a new church.
What they're looking for, well, one, how they searched. They attended the worship service, but also the importance of talking to friends or colleagues, talking to members, talking to the minister. I was surprised at how few looked for information online. It said 36% looked there. Now, they could obviously choose more than one, since 91%, you know, it doesn't all just add up to 100. Mm-hmm. But so that one was a little bit surprising, and only 18% called the church. But they were looking, this is, I think, what they were looking for. Quality of sermons, 94%, 83% feeling welcomed by leaders. I'm a little surprised that there's the emphasis there on leaders, though they didn't say, I don't think there's the option of feeling welcomed by everyone. So that was key. 80% style of worship service and 69% location. Then there's some others. We'll put the link to this. But I think feeling welcomed and just good sermons, quality of sermons, are some just core things that I don't think surprises anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of the panic that comes with, like we've talked about in other podcasts, the changing of cultural values, some of those tension points can send some churches into panic. Not necessarily that churches are in a rush to change, but sometimes it can feel like churches are making huge changes every day. And I think we need to be aware of people's views changing, people's beliefs changing, but relatively, it's a much smaller percent. Any other thoughts from some of the other worship data that we have out there, either from us or other groups? Tips on, a lot of people are curious about this. Any tips on how someone can learn from this, make some decisions?
Well, and I think kind of just more generally, you know, the idea we're pulling in from, I don't know, 6-7 data sources over the course of this conversation to talk about one topic. And so, you know, if that's the space you're in is, hey, I'm really interested in, maybe it's worship and maybe it's, you know, discipleship or, you know, wherever it is, you know, that, you know, do your research and don't be afraid to pull from several different areas to learn more about that.
And I think it's helpful to make to always look at who is in that survey, so mm-hmm. that you know whether it's churches like yours or not. You can still learn from churches that are not like yours, but for some decisions, if you're trying to be similar to some other churches, you need to make sure it's the churches you want to be similar to.
That's true. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Well, that wraps us up for this week. We'd love it if you have some time and you like what you heard, if you could go pop over to iTunes and rate this podcast. You can also give us feedback directly via email at research@lifeway.com or through Twitter. You can find us at Lifeway Research, at SMCon, 2 C's, 2 N's, at Stats Guy Casey, at Lizette Beard. We look forward to talking to you next time. Keep asking, learn more, do better.